For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. Catalonia will declare independence from Spain within a few days, according to the region's leader. Carles Puigdemont says the regional government will take action at the end of this week or perhaps the beginning of next. Spain's King Felipe VI addressed the nation, calling for unity while criticizing the vote in Catalonia.
We have all witnessed the developments in Catalonia, with the Catalan government aiming to illegally proclaim the independence of Catalonia. With their decisions, they have systematically broken norms legally approved, showing an inadmissible disloyalty towards state powers.
The European Union is calling for talks to avert the secession crisis. Tanzania's president, John Magufuli, says he earns $48,000 a year, making him among Africa's lowest paid leaders. Our correspondent in Dar es Salaam, Dan Ashby, reports.
President Magufuli is famous for his cost-cutting, even, it seems, when it comes to himself. He says he earns $48,000 a year, nearly four times less than his Kenyan counterpart, and making him among the lowest paid presidents in Africa. His supporters say it shows his integrity, but critics ask how many of his expenses are really included. Dan Ashby, Dar es Salaam.
In an unusual public statement, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson affirmed his support for U.S. President Donald Trump's agenda and denied he ever thought about quitting. According to NBC News, three officials confirmed that Secretary Tillerson called Donald Trump a moron and nearly quit in July. Asked point blank about whether he called the president a moron, Secretary Tillerson dodged a direct answer.
I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Washington. Again, you know, I'm not from this place, but the places I come from, we don't deal with that kind of petty nonsense. And it is intended to do nothing but divide people. And I'm just not going to be part of this effort to divide this administration.
Donald Trump is demanding an apology, calling the uproar fake news. The American president is traveling to Las Vegas to meet with victims of the mass shooting there. The girlfriend of the Las Vegas gunman, Stephen Paddock, is due to be questioned by police, having returned to the United States. Our U.S. correspondent, Kate Fisher, reports.
Media reports say that Stephen Paddock transferred $100,000 to his girlfriend in the Philippines before Sunday's shooting. He killed 58 people and injured more than 500 when he opened fire on a crowded concert. Her sisters told Australian news outlet 7 News that she'd not known about the trip to the Philippines until Paddock told her he'd bought her a ticket. They believe she was sent away so that she wouldn't interfere with what he was planning. Kate Fisher, Washington.
British Prime Minister Theresa May wanted to deliver a speech to her fellow Tories on renewing the British dream. But the event was undermined by a comedian pulling a stunt and repeated coughing fits by Prime Minister May. This is FSN.
Thank you, Priscilla, and a warm welcome to the program. To your good self, it's Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. The evenings are dark and it's drizzling out there. It's a very miserable Wednesday evening, so it's good to be indoors. Thanks for joining me. This is your Richie Allen Show, and it's live right now.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And the former CIA officer Robert David Steele returns to the program in the second hour. He's been analysing the media coverage of the Las Vegas shooting, and he believes he has uncovered who was really behind it and why. We'll challenge that, of course, in the second hour. Looking forward to hearing from Robert David Steele. And in the first hour, I welcome back Charlotte Hughes to this program. It's a long time since Charlotte was on. She was on in the first couple of months after we went to air in 2014. She's a regular contributor to the Morning Star and has been covering the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. She's also an activist, though, and she'll be revealing shocking details about how the new universal credit benefit system is killing the UK's working poor and the sick and disabled. You don't want to miss this. Charlotte Hughes joins the programme this hour. She's a rather special woman. She joins me in about 20 minutes' time. We are live on davidicke.com, brand spanking new davidicke.com. Very user-friendly. Do check it out. Do bookmark it. Details there of forthcoming live speaking events David will be attending. So check out davidicke.com. We're live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, and of course, richieallen.co.uk. Lot going on, lot to tell you about, so we'll just crack on with it. Got a lot of correspondence over the last couple of days. Whenever something happens, like what happened in Las Vegas, people like me, who've been around a bit, tend to get a lot of correspondence from people asking, what really happened, Richie? The answer is, I don't know. And I know I've said this yesterday, and I know I said it on Monday evening's programme, and we always say it, and it gets a bit trite, does become a bit trite, I know that, but I don't know. What I do know is the news, of course, we say the news as a collective, but they are individual organisations. They don't sound or look very different, but they are. I was, again, annoyed this afternoon, flicking between Sky News and the BBC News 24 today. Both of them, in the late afternoon here in the UK, were taking feed from Las Vegas Airport. So we had 25 minutes, and I don't exaggerate, I always tell you the truth. Don't add any legs onto it. We had 25 minutes of Trump's plane circling, then landing, and then taxiing at Las Vegas Airport. And then we saw the Trumps disembarking Air Force One. But not immediately, because there was a close-up shot of the door of the plane after it was opened, after it was ajar, and there was a close-up shot of it for another few minutes until the Trumps came out. And that's news in 2017 right there. For the dumbed-down masses. Because it's on in all their homes. I've done a lot of extensive work on this. I've talked a lot about this in recent months, pretty much in the last year. And I was thinking today, in some science fiction novels, and I know a lot of listeners to this programme read science fiction, have read science fiction, and a lot of science fiction novels over the years that predicted a dystopian future, often the future they predicted was one within which it was a crime not to have the television on, getting the news speak, the government feed. You'll know these books, 1984, Brave New World. And a book by Stephen King, which is, in my opinion, one of the most underrated science fiction visions of a horrific future. A book called The Running Man, which is an amazing book. Completely destroyed by Arnold Schwarzenegger sometime in the mid-1980s. And other actors and producers. Disgraceful film, which bore no resemblance whatsoever to the book. None. The Running Man, check it out. Written by Richard Bachman, a pseudonym that King was using when he was writing these novellas back in the 1970s. Amazing. So a lot of these science fiction books predicted a future in which it was illegal not to watch the garbage, right? But you know, they'll never have to pass a law to force people to watch it, because people willingly watch it unquestioning. I was out and about again briefly today, and everywhere I went, there was a TV, and either Sky or BBC 24 was on it. There's no need to force people to watch it. They're watching it and they're asking no questions. It never enters their head that there's something profoundly disturbing about the pictures they're seeing. Like today, nothing happening, a plane landing. And fools like Kay Burley and some anonymous Muppet on the BBC talking about Air Force One. Because, Christ, they've left me with images of a plane circling. What am I going to talk about? I'll talk about Air Force One, and then I'll keep repeating the same stuff over and over again. The president's coming here, and he's on his way to meet with those wounded in the horrific shooting the other evening. The president will, of course, come under pressure to talk about gun control. As you can see, the plane there is circling Las Vegas Airport. Air Force One is coming in. Presumably, Melania Trump, the First Lady, is on the plane. This is the crap that passes as news today. So if you could say there is a story, The story is that Trump is on his way to Vegas. Now, in days gone by, when I worked in commercial media, that was a one-liner, at best. A one-liner. And in other news, US President Donald Trump is visiting the wounded in Las Vegas. Now, that becomes a news alert or breaking news, dramatic sweeps and jingles. We've got a breaking news. The president is on Air Force One and he's circling over Las Vegas. The gormless morons. You know, somebody wrote to me, and I think they're right. I think it's a fair point. Don't be calling people names, Richie. You said once before, sheeple is a derogatory term. Don't use it. It's not fair. But the more you see people ingesting this, the more difficult it is to keep your temper and not to abuse them, verbally anyway. Gormless morons. And they're watching basically an afternoon serial drama. Again, as I've highlighted many times on this programme. You know what the result of that is? The result is, I was thinking, and I will be addressing next year various groups of younger men and women who want to get into the media through making podcasts and stuff like this. And I will be talking about this. Do you know what the end result of this is? Is that they don't notice that their news channels of choice are not asking any questions at all. Questions like, pull the other one, would you? Pull the other one. I mean, law enforcement, local law in Vegas and the FBI can make outlandish claims about the Jason Bourne type talents of Stephen Paddock. He had video cameras rigged up now so he could see what the cops and SWAT were doing, the senior citizen. He placed one camera in a food service cart in the corridor, another camera was outside his room, a third camera was in the peephole of his suite, according to officials. Are you saying you know better, Richie Allen, or others like you, that you know the truth? No, I'm not saying that at all. I don't know. But what happened to... Hang on a second there. Pull the other one. He smuggled in all the guns and 10 suitcases from last Thursday up until he allegedly did the shooting. We're still waiting for the CCTV even that shows him doing this. Now, they might roll it out in the next day or two. You'd have thought by now, though, we'd have seen extensive images from the Mandalay Bay casino, which I reckon we should have a competition for a Christmas hamper. How many cameras are in the Mandalay Bay casino? I'd say there's probably 30 to 40,000. I'm only joking. There won't be 30 to 40,000, but there might be 1,000 cameras. In the hotel, the lobby, the foyer, the bars, there'll be cameras everywhere. Why aren't we seeing them? Footage of this man, clear footage that shows his movements in the hotel before the shootings. So the dumbed down, numbed out TV audience laps it all up and isn't surprised when Kay Burley doesn't challenge the mayor of Las Vegas when she interviews her, which she did yesterday. So these clowns make statements, these FBI guys, and they are accepted as fact by journalists. And you want to know why you fall out with your friends. It's because of this type of media that your friends can't see at least some holes in the official story. And I'm not saying the official story is absolutely wrong, because I don't know. I suspect it is untrue, but I can't prove it. But a real journalist would ask some questions. You know, pull the other one. This is why you fall out with your friends, because of this type of media. Your friends look at you and they say, ah, Gary, Elaine, come on. You love the old conspiracy theories, don't you? It's a tragedy. I won't labour the point about the independent media, which is just as bad or worse. So Theresa May had to fight laryngitis today and a comedian running up to her and handing her a P45 as she spoke at the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. Thank God the festering filth are leaving the city, most of them anyway, in the next 12 to 14 to 18 hours. May was handed a sweet by the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, did her best, God love her, said there'll be more council houses and there'll be a cap on energy prices. But the comedian Simon Brodkin, guy called Lee Nelson, made it onto the podium, gave her a P45 before he got chucked out. And he said, Boris asked me to give you this. I have no time for any of these people, so I don't care. But there are some, obviously, some security issues there, right? What were G4S doing? The wonderful G4S. Where were they when this guy was able to basically run up to the Prime Minister? There's nothing in the speech that you need to hear. Nothing at all. We'll be talking about the Tories and their plans for the working poor and the disabled with Charlotte Hughes in a few minutes' time. There was a fascinating story on the Daily, or in the Daily Mail today, though, that I came across. Do you suffer from brain fade? Was the story in the Mail. Millions of Britons, or Brits even, struggle to remember where they left their glasses and even the right type of fuel to fill their car with. Now, this is a common thing. And I have to confess, I've noticed this myself recently. I've noticed it probably in the last couple of years that I'm amongst the very tiny, tiny, tiny few people who know me personally. One of my qualities is my amazing memory. It's why years ago I was often given the job to do the aggressive interview with various politicians, because I've got a memory like an elephant. Remember everything I've ever read, everything I've ever seen, intimate details and stuff like that. But in the last couple of years, I have terrible brain fades. Dreadful. I can't remember something I said a few minutes ago. Can't remember what I was supposed to do. I will walk into a room and have no recollection. Now, I know some people will say, oh, Richie, this is part of the human condition. It's been around a long time. No, it hasn't. Not to this level. You know, and a detailed study has found that more than 9 out of 10 people in this country have this brain fade several times a week. A lot of people are blaming technology for brain fade. You see, when I published, I didn't publish anything. Well, I did. I published it on Facebook. It isn't my story. It's a woman called Unity Blot writing for the Daily Mail. When she published the story and I shared it on social media, everybody, including me, jumped to the aluminium, barium and strontium reason for this, and I think it's certainly got something to do with it. There's no doubt. Geoengineering is real. It's happening. Meteorologists around the world are talking about it. They're putting heavy metals in the atmosphere. We know these heavy metals are causing catastrophic havoc with the animal population of our world. Bees, of course. If the bees go, we're all shagged. But us as well. But it's also definitely got to do with technology. It definitely has to do with the amount of time we're spending looking at a phone in the palm of our hand or a tablet. I have no doubt about it. Of course, the Mail mentions the technology. Doesn't do much more with that. And of course, the Mail won't go anywhere near geoengineering or chemicals or heavy metals being dumped into the atmosphere. But it is real and it is happening. And I wonder, it's probably not much time to get into it today, but I wonder if it's something that you experience in your own life. And I'm not talking about the sort of everyday forgetfulness. I'm talking about, you know, serious episodes of brain fade, which might last for several minutes, might last for an hour. I've had those episodes. And again, memory was always a very strong point for me. It's one of the reasons I did well at third level education. Not because I'm very intelligent at all. I'm not being modest. Jesus, I've never been modest. Far from it. My success at third level was because of my memory. My extraordinary memory. I can regurgitate whatever you tell me, basically. So let me know. I'll be interested to hear what you have to say about it. It's coming up for 19 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show. There's also a story on BBC.co.uk about a mother in the US state of Michigan who has been sentenced to a week in jail because she refused the judge's order to have her son vaccinated. Now, this is about an agreement that she had with her ex-husband. She shares custody of her child with her ex-husband, and she doesn't have full custody. He doesn't have full custody. They share custody. And apparently, they did have some agreement to skip, they had an agreement to stagger the vaccinations that the boy would get, but she has obviously educated herself. She doesn't want the boy to be vaccinated at all. The father does want the boy to be vaccinated. The judge basically said that because they had a previous agreement that said the child would be vaccinated, she has to honour that and has basically forced A, the boy to be vaccinated, and B, sent her to prison for what is effectively contempt of court. That's a big story. Obviously, that's just gone live on bbc.co.uk in the last hour. Michigan mother Rebecca Bredoff, B-R-E-D-O-W, so it's Bredo or Bredoff, refused to let her 9-year-old be immunised after initially agreeing with the father. The judge said the initial agreement was binding somehow. The judge was a woman called Karen McDonald. And Karen McDonald said that they have shared custody, but the mother is the primary caregiver. However, dad gets a say. Dad gets a say. The mum is the primary caregiver, but dad gets a say. Therefore, the child must be vaccinated. And because you won't do it, you're going to go to jail. And in the meantime, we're going to vaccinate him. Yeah. So what is there for me to add to that? It's 21 minutes past the hour. Here's a break. Back in a minute.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And you're very welcome back to this program. Thanks so much for tuning in. I do say that. You know, I do really mean it. It really means a lot to me that you do tune in. It's fantastic. It really is. Thanks for doing it. Thanks for spending time with me every evening and telling others about the program as well. I really do mean that. I think you'll really enjoy hearing from our first guest. If you were with the program from the very beginning, you might remember her. I think she's a wonderful woman. I really do. I watch her from afar, not in a kind of a voyeuristic manner, but I see her all the time out there working with people in really desperate situations and circumstances, writing about them in the Morning Star. And all the great activism that she does. Charlotte Hughes, the journalist and activist, is going to join me in a minute. She's just popped in to the old room, well, the cyber room. We have a cyber room here, don't we? So we'll take some music from the Lighthouse family then. This is a song called Lifted on your Richie Allen Show. We're live on davidike.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. It's 24 minutes past the hour. It's Wednesday, the 4th of October 2017. Don't forget, Robert David Steele from the CIA in the second hour too. Back in three.
I really love to be alone without all the ache and pain and the April showers. But it ain't long before I long for you like a ray of hope coming through the blue. When it all gets dark and then the whole thing falls apart, I guess it doesn't really matter about the rain, 'cause we'll get through it anyway. Get up and start again, 'cause we could be lifting, lifting, lifting. We could be lifting from the shadow, lifting. Oh, we could be lifted up today, lifted all the way.
That's the Lighthouse Family and Lifted on the Richie Allen Show, and it's 26 and a half minutes past the hour. Austerity is killing people in this country, and it's killing large numbers of people, and it's largely going unreported in the UK media. Spoke at length on Sunday View this week about universal credit, this ridiculous new benefit system which is designed to amalgamate vital payments that the working poor and the poor and the sick and disabled need, to amalgamate them into one single payment and to pay it monthly as opposed to weekly or fortnightly. It's meaning that in many cases people are going 4, 5, 6 weeks without any money. And these are people living on the margins, subsistence living basically. You know what I think about this? And I've spoken to some great men and women on this programme about this in the past, including our first guest who will be with me in a second. Including Professor Alex Scott Samuel at Liverpool University, a regular guest of this programme. He agrees with me. It's a genocide, really. And those who are doing it know what it's doing to people. We're going to talk about that and more with our first guest, who's been covering the Conservative Party conference here in Manchester over the last few days. She's a regular contributor to the Morning Star and an activist and a humanitarian. I watch her through Facebook and the work that she does on a daily basis, bringing to people's attention the shocking statistics of, austerity and what it's doing to people. Let's welcome back to the programme. I think it's been a couple of years. It's about time we said hello again to Charlotte Hughes. Charlotte, welcome back.
Hi, Richard.
I'm really well, and thanks for coming on. I know you've had a busy few days. What was it like? What was the experience like, covering and protesting at and speaking to people at the Conservative Party conference? What's been happening?
Well, it was as I expected, really. I mean, I do cover every Tory party conference that's held in Manchester. So I cover the 2015 on a personal basis. I was still demonstrating then anyway, but I was expecting to be cordoned off. I was expecting security to be high. In reality, when I saw the police, there wasn't that many more that I saw around me, around there. The police were all quite nice. They didn't want to be there. None of the delegates really wanted to be there. We couldn't get round the side this year. The police were a lot stricter, but... And then a special cornered off area where you could go and stand and shout, but we tried to avoid that if possible, because it's an ideal kettle in an area. But it was actually quite good, actually. To know why they do these things, you've got to sometimes talk to the enemy, you know. And it's always interesting to see what they have to say, and it certainly was enlightening in some ways, yeah.
I can imagine it was. So two things. One, you didn't feel that your personal right to be there and protest was in any way impeded. And two, apart from the MPs and the ministers and the secretaries of state, you did get to meet and speak with Conservative Party supporters, ordinary people like you and me. Is it fair to say that, one, you weren't impeded from being there, and two, you did get to speak with people?
The reason why I wasn't impeded was because I know the rules, and I knew the fact that I was not allowed to shout in this area because it was cordoned off, and that was the only area that I could actually really approach the delegates as they were coming in and going out. So I was, you've got to use your common sense sometimes. If I went in there shouting and screaming, then I would be let out.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so sometimes when it's easy to lose your temper very quickly. And we've had Universal Credit for 4 years now, so it's not new to us. So I'm very angry about it, but I've learned to approach it calmly. And yeah, so I wasn't impeded, but I would have been if I'd have lost my temper. The police were quite reasonable with me as far as police go. There were a few more armed police, but to be fair, they weren't doing much anyway. You know, they were just stood there talking to their mates. And what you've got to understand is, Richie, that they're not ordinary people that attend this conference, not like the Labour Party conference or the Green Party conference. It costs a lot of money to go to a Conservative Party conference. I'm not sure how much it is, but it is a lot. And you've got to, I don't know how it works in the Tory Party, but to be a delegate for the Labour Party, you've got to be put up for it and you've got to be nominated. So I'm sure they have their own nominated delegates. And also, if you work for an MP, a Conservative MP, you'll get put forward for it. So you've either got to have money or you've got to know someone to get in. So every person that I spoke to had something to do with the Conservative Party, you know.
Now, tell us this, Charlotte. When you were speaking to them, and I'm glad you mentioned that Universal Credit has been in this city for 4 years. They've just accelerated the rollout of it, but you're quite right. They began the experimentation of it, it's not an experiment. They're bringing it in 2013. So when you're talking to Conservative Party rank and file people and you're telling them the truth about what this is doing to people, how did they react to you?
They don't see it as being anything wrong. They see it as it's a good thing. And that's how they see it. They think that they're doing us a favour. They literally do. Well, that's how they're educated, you know. They think that the poor should be responsible for their own poverty. And that's how they're educated within their system. So they think that universal credit is a good thing, that there is no delays. Now, you mentioned between 4, 5 and 6 weeks. It's more like 12 weeks plus before you get your money. They think you can just get a loan off the DWP to see you through. But you can't really, because if you get a loan off the DWP, it comes out of your first lot of money.
Right.
So it's complicated. So they don't see that. They just see it as blanket. We are doing them good. We have got the undeserving poor here, you know. So it's endemic in their system. So their system comes from the Victorian system of the deserving and undeserving poor. And you've got to think like them. That's how they think. So it doesn't matter how much I could scream and shout at them and say, you're a so-and-so and you're a so-and-so. They don't see themselves as being that. They think that they've got this God-given right to treat us like this.
Charlotte, do us a favour. Explain to our listeners what you mean by this Victorian attitude, the deserving and undeserving poor. What does that mean exactly?
Right, in Victorian England, and I'm sure it happened in Ireland as well, we had places called the Poor Law, and we had workhouses and poor relief. So if you were poor and say your husband had left you or you didn't have any work or there was a famine or, you know, like the potato famine, whatever, you had to go to the board of governors and you had to state why you needed that money, and you had to go through everything. They used to come and visit you at your home and they used to say, right, you've got a chair there, you can sell that chair for some money. We're not going to give you any money until your house is empty. Somebody who is undeserving now is someone who is poor, who is unemployed, who is seen as not doing anything that the Tory party is being contributing to anything or anyone. So a sick person is seen as being undeserving.
Somebody with a disability, maybe. Somebody with a disability would be undeserving.
Yeah, because everyone in the top... You've got to remember it, that Richie, everyone in... The Conservative Party sees someone as having a value, okay? And it's and there's a value, there's a pound signed over your head. So as soon as you enter the DWP system, you're a value to them. When you're on the work program, you're a value, you know. So what the Tory party have done is they've looked at the Victorian system of the deserving poor and the undeserving poor, and they've recreated it in the way that they have done. So it's basically a recreating of it, you know. And of course, when somebody is undeserving poor in their eyes, like a disabled person, like an unemployed single parent, like a child, then they're less able to fight back, aren't they?
So you believe...
This
is staggering, and I don't doubt you. This is, I want our listeners to pay attention to this, not just here in the UK, but everywhere else that we have listeners in the world. Listen to this. So there is a program, or there is an agenda, to ultimately demonetize what they call the undeserving poor, sick and disabled, to basically get rid of them. And Alex Scott Samuel, whom you'll know from Liverpool University, he said this on this program. Ultimately, the plan is to get rid of them, you believe?
I think the ultimate plan is to make themselves richer and to make the poor poorer. And if they don't have to pay for those poor people, then they'll do it. And if someone dies as a consequence of that, then that's just collateral damage in their eyes. And it sounds cold, but that's how they do think. I really do believe that. The way they talk to you is, that is just how it is. We're collateral damage. So I don't think they sit there and thinking, right, Joe Bloggs down the street, we don't like him, so we'll knock him off. You know, that sort of language. I don't think they'll do that, but they'll say they don't deserve that money. They don't deserve to live. It doesn't matter if they've not got any heating. So that's a lower down Tories. A higher up Tories, honestly, they think that we have still got everything and no money, you know. They don't even know how much a pint of milk is or a loaf of bread is or anything like that. So they've got no idea, Richard, of the real world, you know.
Well, they don't because the front bench and... This goes for the Labour Party. Now, I know you were and are one of those delighted to see the Labour Party take, to take a different path under Jeremy Corbyn. But the parties, of course, are packed to the rafters with millionaires and in many cases multi-millionaires. It's hardly representative democracy anyway, is it? I mean, I'm not a millionaire. I'll never be a millionaire. I barely get to the end of the month. I know you're the same, Charlotte. These people, ultimately, Jeremy Corbyn might be different, Dennis Skinner might be different, and I give these guys a lot of stick because I don't like politics and politicians in general, but I think they're certainly different in terms of their mentality than the likes of May and Hammond. I have no doubt about that. But ultimately, they can't relate to us because these are very comfortable multimillionaires, aren't they? Most of them.
I'm not going to say that the Labour Party politicians are millionaires because I don't believe that. There is some very high up that are well off, but the lower down ones I do know are down to earth, you know. People like Angela Rayner and that, she's really down to earth. But the Tory party, the Conservatives, yes, they are multimillionaires,
yeah,
you know.
So many of them,
they
yeah.
haven't got a clue, you know, and they really don't want to have a clue. And that's the thing. So we've got to stop saying, let's make them listen to us, right? Let's appeal to their better nature. They haven't got a better nature. They don't see it, you know. So it's a waste of time asking them for sympathy because they haven't got any. So we've got to work on it a different way.
Give our listeners an idea. And again, I'm not buttering you up, but I know that you're a rare breed because you're out there all the time, day in, day out with people, helping people in dire circumstances. I know this. Like I said, it's a shame that you've not been back on since you were forced on. There's no real reason for that, but I'm glad you're back on now. You're out there. Give our audience an idea of the scale of poverty that exists. You see, I have this feeling that poverty in this country is far, 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 far worse than any media organisation will ever admit or give credit for. I believe there are millions only weeks away from the streets or from the gutter, God love them. Give us an idea of how bad things are for people.
Things are really bad. I mean, we've got, I think more or less 3/4 of the population is actually in some kind of poverty, because there's not just one level of poverty, there's 3 levels of poverty. There's absolute poverty, relative poverty, and there's another one, I can't remember the name now, sorry listeners. So we're all suffering in some sort of way, you know. People who are working are suffering because they can't afford childcare, they can't afford to pay the rent, you know. So it is going into millions. Now, what you've got to remember is it's not a myth when we say, and I say, it used to be 2 payslips, but now it's everyone is 1 payslip away from being in this situation. It's not a myth, that's a reality. People don't have savings anymore to back themselves up either. So if you've got a job, you've got to keep it. And you've got to keep a really, really awful job as well, because you've got no choice. At the moment, I think we've got, and this figure is probably a bit underestimated, to be fair, because when the government do estimates for employment and unemployment, they don't class the people who have been sanctioned, okay, because they're not classed as unemployed anymore. They just don't exist. So we've got, at the moment, we've got over 2 million unemployed people. It's way over that, I do think. And they're also working poor, and they're people forced to undertake zero-hour contracts and agency work. They're often combined, so your life isn't your own, and you're working most likely for less than the minimum wage. We take into account a care assistance job who is less than the minimum wage. It's supposed to be the minimum wage, but you're paid less because you've got to pay your own transport and your own petrol. And these people have to claim universal credit. So these people who are working the lesser out, it's just mad. They have to sign on at the job centre every week. So it's most working people, working class working people now, are in some kind of poverty. Absolute poverty. There is absolutely no figures for that at the moment. I've been trying to find figures while I've been out today. I did do an article a while ago about figures about people being in poverty, and I can't find it at the moment. I'm looking for it desperately. I can give you numbers on sanctions, though, and how many people have been sanctioned recently.
Now, do us a favour, Charlotte. Let's not assume knowledge now. A lot of our listeners won't understand what sanctions mean. First of all, before you do that, let me just remind our listeners overseas. Historically, in the United Kingdom and in the Republic of Ireland, when somebody is out of work, they are entitled to assistance from the state to cover their essentials. That's historically accurate. Well, in recent decades, anyway, they're entitled to that. And that's what, when Charlotte refers to benefits, that's what they are. There are different types of benefits, unemployment assistance. There's obviously benefits to help pay your fuel. There's housing benefit and stuff like that. These are, they're so, I can't find the words to describe how essential this help is for many, many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in this country. But in the last 6, 7 years, 8 years, what we began to see, was an attack on this system to diminish those payments, to make it more difficult for people who need those payments to get them. And this is what Charlotte's going to talk about now, sanctioning people. What does sanctioning somebody who gets state assistance mean, Charlotte?
It means that you lose all your income. Yeah. And when it's complicated with a benefit called universal credit, it's even worse. So a sanction is when you are supposedly, you haven't complied to one of their rules. Now, the British system now is becoming more and more computerised, so everything is done at the touch of a button instead of seeing a person. And they can decide your future at the touch of a button, which they always do. So a sanction means that you've got no income. Okay, so you've got no money for gas and electric or food. Some people manage to get a very base amount of about £30 a week. Now, £30 a week is not a lot of money if you've got children. So
nothing, it's nothing.
No, but a lot of single people get nothing, get zero, you know, a zero income. So then they're having to go to places like food banks and like they have in America, and it's appalling, absolutely appalling, because you don't get a good meal from a food bank. You just get essentials to keep you alive. So a sanction is decided by a person called a decision maker. A decision maker works for the Department of Work and Pensions, and they're employed by the government. So challenging these people isn't easy, but I must stress to anybody living in the UK, you must challenge them, because you can do, and it's a law that you can do. And most people do win their appeals as well.
This is an extraordinary thing that you just mentioned. They sanction people for nothing. And
it's not always nothing.
Not always.
They've got a reason. Yeah.
They will give some reason, but it's what I mean by nothing. The reasons are often flimsy at best. And what that means is it plunges the person into seriously, seriously dire straits. But as you just pointed out there, what we've seen in the last few years is that the appeals are upheld. As far as I can tell, Charlotte, it's over 80% of the time.
Yeah, they are, because, I mean, you can be sanctioned so your money can get stopped for attending a funeral at the same day as you're signing on an appointment, even though you've informed them. You can get sanctioned for attending a work programme, which is one of their so-called training schemes, at the same time as you're signing on appointments, even though you changed it. So, yeah, and these people do win their appeals, but people forget to appeal. People get fed up. They don't want to appeal. So then that spirals them into any more debt. And there's always the risk of someone just giving up, you know? So that's how hard it is. So a sanction is exactly it. We hear of international sanctions when a country cuts off that other country's allowance, you know.
Yes.
We will stop dealing with you. Well, that's exactly what that they do with these people. We will stop dealing with you until you comply. Either you comply, basically, or you die. And that's exactly how they do it. And it's massive. So we're dealing with now the number of benefit sanctions. Now, that's all. I hate the word benefit because it's Social Security. But I have to I say that because it's a bit easier now.
Can I ask you a question on that? Again,
yeah?
Language is very important to these people.
Oh, yeah.
So using a word like benefit, which is a kind of a demeaning word for the recipient, it really is. Do you see in the choice of that word a way to demean, and again, you know, to kind of get the public, to get those who are lucky enough to have a stable job and who are lucky enough to have, you know, the ability to pay their bills, do you think using words like benefit is in some way to make us think less of people on important? And I'm so glad you said this. I never thought of this. We should stop calling it benefit. We should say Social Security. Do you think they deliberately set out to dehumanise people who get Social Security?
Oh, yeah. They wanted to bring in the American terminologies, which is exactly what they are, to divide people. Remember, this government have done an amazing job, and it's one of their best achievements of reintroducing the divide and conquer technique. We will set your neighbour against your neighbour, you know, because you might have a few quid less than the other one. So, yeah, it's entirely intentional. It's corporate speak, and that's how they think, you know. They don't think like us, you know. They don't want us to have security, Social Security. That is a good word. That's a positive word.
It
means people looking after each other. They want us to say that as a benefit, and a benefit means you're taking off somebody for nothing. You know, that's how they see it, and that's how the public are now seeing it. Not all the public, but those that read The Sun and The Daily Express and The Telegraph and The Mail, they see it as that. They see it as you're getting a benefit for nothing. When you paid your tax and insurance all your life, or your working life, so you're entitled to that.
And they put out stories which are hilarious, works of fiction, where they find some woman or some man who has, you know, been a bit clever with the system, and they might have a load of children, and they do a big story saying that, oh, this person manages to get £50,000 or £60,000 a year. And it's written in such a disgusting way, and you're a journalist, so you know all about writing. It's written in a way that the general public thinks, what a lazy, work-shy group of bastards benefit claimants are. And of course, the story in the Mail bears no resemblance to reality. Because I'm an ethical journalist. I believe I am. I'm fair. You know, if I was to believe that there were lots of people claiming Social Security payments, let's never use the term benefits again, Social Security payments, and they were doing it and they were having a laugh, I would say that. But the truth is they're not. That's just not happening. But this is how the media portrays it. Work shy, lazy, opportunistic bastards. That's what they want us to believe, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah. And it's not true. I mean, the figures that they come out with, I mean, it's just ridiculous. They come out with like a ballpark figure. Now, what they're forgetting is most of that figure has gone on housing benefit because the poor lady, I'm thinking of a lady that had about 8 children, she split up from a partner and she needed a bigger house. It was some sort of complicated story like that. Housing benefit took up most of that money.
Of course it did. As Charlotte just dropped out, she has momentarily. She might have done. Charlotte Hughes is on the line. Charlotte is a journalist and an activist. She writes for the Morning Star. She's just dropped out momentarily. Charlotte, you might be back. Are you back there?
Yeah, it's what they want.
Sorry about that. While you were speaking there, your feed just dropped all of a sudden. So we just missed the last 20 seconds of that. So what we were saying, and I think you were just finishing off on that point, again, they want to create a perception in the minds of people who don't need Social Security payments, who don't need assistance from the state. In our minds, they want to create a derogatory opinion for those who do need help, right? End of story.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they want to do. Because what they want to do is make themselves richer. And it's, you know, only eight people in this country own the vast majority of the wealth in this country.
Yeah.
And that is what they want to do. And when Theresa May came out with that statement that she's achieved the best thing that she could ever achieve, I can't remember what she said now, I've been out all day, sorry, Richard, that she'd achieved the biggest achievement that blah, 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 blah. And everyone said she's mad, she's not achieved anything. She has achieved it. She's achieved everything she wants to achieve. She has made herself and her friends richer. They're getting richer and richer by the day. And it's no mistake, absolutely no mistake. I'm trying to find the figures now, actually.
While you're doing I try to avoid as best I can being sensational. But there's no way to desensationalize this or to overdo it. These policies, tens of thousands of people have died directly as a result of these policies. They've either taken their own lives or some harm has come to them because of the state that they found themselves in. We're talking about maybe tens of thousands of people, right?
Thousands and thousands. I mean, we come out with figures about people dying, and I used to read out a list of people who had died as a result of Social Security cuts and changes in universal credit. I can't read the list out anymore. There is just too many.
And you know people personally as well, because you've met people. Yeah. Along the way, you've befriended people, and then you've learned that it's become too much for them. The humiliation of it, the harassment from the Department of Work and Pensions, it all gets on top of them, and they either get very sick and die or they take their own lives. And I don't want to make you upset. It's not the point of me asking
you.
Oh,
it's fine.
How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that when you find out that some, you know, person who's, you know, your lives, your paths have crossed through your activism, and you find out that they couldn't take it anymore and they took tablets or they did something else? How do you feel about that?
It never leaves you. I get very upset. I mean, every Thursday when I do my demonstrations, sometimes I come home and have a good cry, because there's not a lot else you can do. You can get angry. I mean, as well as covering it, I was actually there to look my oppressors in the face, in a way, and remind and be a support to the people who can't get out there, who aren't represented, who wanted to be there but they can't be there. To say, hang on, we're still here. Us common people are still here, and we've got a voice. It affects us. But I've learned to cope with it in a way that if it happens, then I tell people about it. You know, I'll write about it. I'll write something for the paper. I'll do something on another news channel. It could get out there, because I'm determined not to let these people's, this person's, somebody who I know is suffering, their life to go in vain, you know. Everybody is worth something, you know, and everybody is somebody's mother or somebody's son, you know, or somebody's daughter or somebody's auntie or uncle or whatever. And this government forgets that, you know, they can use all the best terminology in the world and the business speak, and they can sit at their board tables and work out what speeches they're going to make next and what differences they're going to make to our lives. But we will always sit together, because they are, in fact, more of us than they are of them, you know. And I was talking at a meeting about some movement that happened in Ireland in the last century, and it was an uprising. And it was, I can't remember the uprising now, and I do apologise to the author if he's listening. But it was really fascinating, because it was very similar, you know, very similar situation where these people were told that, well, you can just go and starve, and they weren't prepared to put up with it. And we're not prepared to put up with it, you know. And it's our job now to hold them accountable. And that is why how I get through it is by holding them accountable. And it's not as hard as you think either, you know.
Well, you absolutely do a lot. Sorry to interrupt you, Charlotte. You and others do a lot of very positive work, which is, mentioned a few minutes ago, people get frustrated. They get bogged down by the idea of the appeal and paperwork, and it's miserable. But people like you get in touch, you get involved with people, and you say, well, look, this is how you do what you need to do, and you help them along with it. That's hugely positive, that.
Yeah, it's, we hand out survival guides, And these guides are literally a survival guide. But what they are is what to do. How to get through the system without being sanctioned, having your money stopped. How to fill your forms in the right way. How to appeal a situation. How to stop that downward spiral from starting. And also, if you are in that downward spiral, then there is local organisations that we access that we can refer people to. And also, sometimes, on some occasions that I will take someone to an appeal, or I will help fill people's forms in. And that's an important thing, because sometimes people will only trust us. Because if you're there on the front line, you're dealing with that person at their point, they're at their most vulnerable. That man who's crying or shouting and running off, he might go home and do something awful. So yeah. I'll run after that person and I'll say, hang on, what's the matter? You know, and say, what's going on? And they'll talk to me, you know, and it has saved a few people. I've not.
Just a little problem with Charlotte's line there. It's dropped out again. Charlotte is local, so she should be you're there. You're just dropping out a little bit, Charlotte. Sorry about that. That's one of those things. Yeah, you just dropped out again. The line just, it's not your fault. The line just dropped again, but you're back now. No, it's not your fault. I want to ask you a question, and this is the problem I have with some of what Jeremy Corbyn has been saying, and I'm going to give you the right to reply to that, and you'll get the final word. And I do also want you to mention any places where people can go, websites or anything where they can get some help if they're in difficulties, especially with appeals and stuff. But I want to just make this point to you. I think that because of his backbench career, I think that Corbyn is sincere when he talks about the impact these policies have on the working poor and the sick and disabled. I do believe that about him. And I should mention, his brother is a regular guest on this programme, and we have argued about Jeremy. My problem is, Charlotte, I'll make it as brief as I can, is that to fund the really important social policies that he wants to fund, he's going to borrow from the same criminal banks that every government has ever borrowed from. And eventually, and she's gone again, I think, I was just building up to something. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just disconnect and reconnect to her. That might clear out any old, I don't know, interference on the line, as it were. Let's do that again. Charlotte Hughes, who writes for the Morning Star, is an activist and a great help to people who've been sanctioned, who've had their social security payments sanctioned. Charlotte, I just disconnected because you did drop out briefly again. I'm just going to make the point very briefly. The problem I have with the way they want to pay for the programmes they want to introduce, which are important programmes, is they want to do what every government has always done, to borrow from banks which loan that money into existence, meaning that in another few years, if there's a different government in, it's the same problem again. Those banks come calling for that money, and that money then has to come out of the pockets of people through austerity. That's my problem with Corbyn. No. He doesn't go far enough. You can't borrow your way out of this. Go ahead.
I don't think that's what Corbyn's suggesting at all. Jeremy Corbyn is suggesting that the big multimillionaire tax-paying businesses start paying their taxes to pay for it. And that's a perfect example. You know, if they paid their taxes, if people like Virgin and that paid their taxes, then we would have an immediate revenue. He also made the suggestion of not investing in NATO anymore, in nuclear weapons, and that would make a massive income. Also, it's quite strange how the government and Theresa May could find £1 billion for the DUP out of nowhere.
Very good.
And, you know, so the money is there. It just needs rejigging. You see, what we've got to remember with this government is that they've got their priorities all wrong. They're about money. They're about profit for themselves. They're about taking anyone that they see as less valuable in life and giving it to themselves. So Jeremy Corbyn has got the answers, and if you actually read the manifesto, I mean, if you combine that with the Green Party's manifesto, you've got the perfect manifesto there, you know. The answers are there, the solutions are there. I haven't got it in front of me, I haven't got a copy at the moment.
I know you don't have to, you've given a good answer, it's a good answer, Charlotte, it's a good answer. I don't entirely agree with it, but it's a good answer.
Let's just get the taxpayers paying the tax, yeah? Let's get Virgin and let's get... or Starbucks and places like that paying their taxes.
And Amazon. Well, it's a good point. This week, the European Union has said they're going to claim hundreds of millions of pounds in unpaid taxes by Amazon. Look, I totally agree with that and I can't argue with it. And I'm not going to have another say because I'm a man of my word. I'm going to give you the final say for today, though, and I will invite you back again real soon. Where is their help? There might be somebody listening to this programme today and they might have had their social security payment sanctioned and they're absolutely at their wits' end. Is there anywhere online, Facebook or anywhere they can go to get help, Charlotte?
Yeah, there's a group called Fight Back on Facebook. They're really good. There's a group called, there's all sorts of groups. If you go on Fight Back, that's the main one because you will get a direct answer on Facebook. Twitter isn't so good at it. You've got Works Benefits and Work as well, and that's a site set up to help people as well.
Do me a favour, will you?
Governmenty, but it is nothing to do with the government.
Well, do me a favour. When you get a chance, send me through Skype. Send me a link to the Fight Back Facebook page, and I'll tweet it out because I've put Fight Back into Facebook, and I've gotten a couple of different answers there.
Yeah, well, yeah. What I can do is send you a few links of different ones, and Four Up and Place, things like that. So they can help as well, and they're inundated as well. So what I do recommend a person does as well is to educate yourself and or learn your rights, and that's what we do. We tell people their rights. So when a decision is made, you've got to ask for a mandatory reconsideration. That's the first thing you should do. So a person has to do that. And if they want to do that with help, they can go to the Citizens Advice or the Welfare Rights if they have got one in the area. There might also be local food banks might know organisations, and your local council should certainly know organisations that can signpost you to those places. And you've got to do that within 30 days, although there is exemptions for extensions on that. You need to ask about hardship payments, food bank help. The very first thing you should do is contact your local authority to keep your housing benefit and your council tax payments upline and keep them going, and explain the situation and show them that you've got no income. Therefore, you can still get your housing benefit because that's one thing you need to keep.
Even if you've got
no heating or anything, keep your house, because once you lose a house, you'll be seen as losing it intentionally, and you will not get another one.
And you won't get it back. Jesus Christ.
When you've done that, you can go after you've done a reconsideration. If it is not approved, then...
Bloody line has dropped out again, has it? Strange that in this city, and we're one of those cities, we've got the super fast broadband.
Charlotte, advice, welfare rights.
We're just losing you there again. Send us the links. No, again, it's just the line. It's probably our end. Send me those links and I will put them out there. I want to thank you for coming on to talk about this again. Folks, you can read Charlotte on the Morning Star online.
She's written Poor Side of Life, the blog.
And the blog, of course, yeah. And I will put links out to that as well on our Facebook page and Twitter, Charlotte. And you know you're welcome back on the programme anytime.
Okay.
And thanks for doing it. And thanks very much for doing what you do week in, week out. You're not looking for credit.
You know, one person has helped and that's what it's worth, isn't it? You know, that's why we do it.
We wouldn't have any problems like the problems we have if there were more people like you, and that's an absolute truth. I really mean that.
No, we'd have the perfect utopian society.
We might.
Unfortunately, the Tory Party think we live in the utopian society now.
Well, for 8% of the country, maybe. Thanks so much for coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
Look after yourself and continued success, Charlotte. Thanks a million.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Richie.
You're welcome. All the best. Thanks. Bye for now. The lovely Charlotte Hughes on the line to us there. The Morning Star online, the blog, will put out links to it. And when I get that link to Fight Back, I'm sure one of our listeners has tweeted it anyway. I will tweet it and put it on there. It's a Facebook community where there is immediate help for anybody who might have been sanctioned, had their social security payment sanctioned wrongly, meaning that they're in absolutely dire straits. You know. Yeah, 3.5 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. Very quick break. And more, don't forget, Robert David Steele joins the programme. He's been following developments in Las Vegas and he's got plenty to say about them. Back in a minute.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise,
yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings
may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece
with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and
valuable information to get published.
Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the show. 6 minutes past the hour. It's Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. This is your Richie Allen Show live right now on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio in Manchester, and davidike.com, the new and sexy davidike.com. Do check it out if you haven't done so already. So Robert David Steele joins us in a few minutes' time. We will be talking about the latest on the Las Vegas developments, the shooting. You know, if you've been on planet Mars for the last few days, you've only arrived back. Scores of people, 60 people, 59 people, maybe more, killed at an outdoor concert in Vegas a couple of days ago. A man has been blamed for it, hundreds more injured. A man called Stephen Paddock, 64-year-old man, retiree, has been blamed for it. They've made some extraordinary claims about how he supposedly carried it off. Again, I don't know. I'd be very sceptical about those claims. I think any right-minded human being should be sceptical about some of those claims. Again, scepticism isn't condemning or declaring that the person making the claims is a liar. It's just scepticism. Okay, I've heard your claim. Now, can you provide me with some evidence, please? Because when I have evidence, my scepticism will melt away. Right? But you don't get any evidence. And as I mentioned in the monologue, Sky News, BBC News 24, Fox, C-SPAN, CNN, NBC, CBS, 60 Minutes, won't ask these people to prove any of the claims they have made about Stephen Paddock. And that's the disturbing thing about it. Of course, in that vacuum jump the dummies in the independent media, the narcissistic truther industrial complex, who have the whole story. They know everything. And of course, that serves no purpose whatsoever, other than to massage their very inflated egos. But that's where we are. This is the media in 2017. Oh, Christ. Yeah, so we'll have a chat with Robert David Steele and see what he thinks about it. Very interesting man, of course. He's been on the programme many times before. He has announced his presence to me. So, while I dial him up, we'll take some music and we'll get him on. And of course, if there's anything you'd like me to say to him, any questions, remember this is a former CIA officer, do let me know and I will put them to him and we'll see what he says. How about that? All right. Okay, this is the Black Crowes. And they're a cover version of Hard to Handle on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Robert David Steele next.
Your candle calls the mama. I'm sure all the hand and I just around. I don't speak loud in the words, and I'm a man of great experience. I know you got another man, but I can love you better than him. Take my hand, don't be afraid. I'm gonna prove every word I say. I'm advertising love for free, so you can place your hand to me. Once I come along and down by the dozen, I ain't nothing but thing, let me light your candle, calls a mama. I'm sure all the hand and I just around. Candle calls her mama. I'm sure all the hand and I just around.
Right, welcome back. The Black Crowes, Hard to Handle on the Richie Allen Show, live on DavidIke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio and RichieAllen.co.uk. Lot of tweets, of course, about Las Vegas. Spoke about it briefly in the monologue. Wanted to wait until we had our next guest on. He's been on the programme several times before. We like him. He's a former CIA officer, of course, and the CEO of Earth Intelligence Network. He was recently on the programme talking about his initiative, UNRIG, which is very interesting, a non-profit civics education campaign, which, of course, within which, of course, he was joined by former Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, a really, really important initiative as well. We might talk about that in a few minutes' time, but we want to talk about Las Vegas. Let's welcome back to the show our friend Robert David Steele. Robert, welcome back. How are you?
Richie, glad to be with you. Are we only audio or just video also?
We're just audio today, my friend. I'm too ugly for TV. You're gorgeous, but I'm too ugly for TV, so you can switch off the old TV camera there. Thanks, Robert. Robert, your initial thoughts then, straight up, on what you've seen in the last two and a half days, Stephen Paddock, 64, dozens killed, hundreds injured, the reaction to it, the media coverage of it, what are your thoughts so far? What do you think?
Number one, it is absolutely a false flag associated with a FEMA drill that has been taking place for several days. It is a false flag. Number two, there is absolutely no evidence that anyone other than Paddock has died. Number three, I'm sure that Paddock, if his hands were tested, would test negative for gun residue, just like Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas. He's a patsy. What we don't know is whether people have actually died. The entire official narrative is absolutely a lie.
I don't know either. And I was glad to read in the article that you sent me today, and I suppose it's, you know, it's grown-up journalism. You did say that that you have no direct knowledge, which is fair. It's a very fair premise at the outset, and I really appreciate that. I obviously have no idea either, and I'm certainly not going to contradict you here. If I had to make a bet on it, I would say they probably killed some people. I think some people might have died. Again, I can't back it up. I'm interested, Robert, in some of the videos that have come out, and you've alluded to them in your article, which I'm going to tweet out now to our listeners.
Well, I've put a couple of videos.
Yeah,
in there.
Interesting. Yeah. Talk about those videos.
All right. Well, let me say a couple of things. First off, I am absolutely certain in my own mind that we were warned by 13 countries about 9/11 months in advance. Dick Cheney scheduled a national level counterterrorism exercise for the day of 9/11. And Dick Cheney personally oversaw the murder of 3,000 U.S. and other citizens in New York and the Pentagon to suit the Zio-Con, the Zionist neoconservative goals. There's no question that these people will murder up to 3,000 people in order to get their way. And they'll get away with it because the acting director of the FBI and the new director of the FBI, their entire job, this was Mueller, Mueller's entire job as director of the FBI was to keep Dick Cheney from being found out. So I'm very disgusted with these people. As to whether people died or not, we just don't know. The fact is, all of the evidence suggests that no one died. There are no blood pools. And the videos that purport to show people that are wounded, the one that's going around from this leak channel, is nonsense. First off, it's a very narrow cast thing. There's no wide area survey. There's no scene of lots of bodies spread around. It's almost like they're following a trail of breadcrumbs. But more tellingly, the person who's examining them keeps saying, no entry wound, no exit wound, cannot treat. No entry wound, no exit wound, cannot treat. Newsflash, crisis actors. That's my best guess right this minute.
You see, I can't argue with that. I don't want not to argue with you, but I can't argue because I've seen
look at the video of the taxi scene. The way in which that camera was managed was very carefully calibrated to avoid showing the people. It was almost like a crisis action script, and the taxi was actually positioned, waiting for the event to begin. And for these people to then so-called rush into the taxi.
Yeah.
All of this, I've run a false flag for the CIA. Nobody died in mind. All of this reeks, absolutely reeks of a false flag event. And I really have to stress, there is no way on God's earth that Paddock fired a bullet into that crowd.
Do you want to give us an idea of the false flag you ran for the CIA? What did you do?
Oh, no, absolutely not. But I will tell you where false flags started. It started in warfare at sea, when not only pirates, but other countries would fly the flag of their enemy so as to approach them and then surprise them in warfare at sea. That's where the term false flag comes from. It means nothing more or less than not what it appears to be. Yeah. And I have published an excellent 150, 180 page Kindle at Amazon that talks about false flags as a tool of the deep state.
Robert David Steele is our guest this hour. Busy man today. Former CIA officer. We talked about UNRIG. We'll ask Robert about that before he leaves us today. I can accept you telling me, Robert, that you think it might have been a hoax because you've talked about many of these events before and you treat each one on their merits. But sadly for me, much of the independent media is worse than the mainstream media because whenever we have a terrorist attack or a gun attack, they scream hoax about everything. Now, you're not doing that. And I wouldn't bracket you with some of these people. I just believe that, you know, they've put out so many details about so many of these victims.
Richie,
I've just got to imagine they killed some people at the time.
Controlled media. I mean, you're talking crisis.
Yeah.
You're talking crap news network.
Yeah, yeah.
The New York Crimes and the Washington Poop.
Yeah.
Okay. These people are worthless.
Worthless, yeah.
They are actually, I mean, Time Magazine takes its cover story straight from the CIA covert action staff. This is just disgusting. The Russians did it. No, the Russians didn't do it. Julian Assange and I both know that. So I believe that we are now in a state of grave danger in the United States of America. All of our institutions have failed us. There is no integrity in the academy, in media, in labor unions, in religions, in the government. Everybody lacks integrity. And what's happening now is the populist left and the populist right are beginning to emerge. And I will tell you, Richie, I'm predicting that the 2018 election in the United States of America is going to be the year of the populist independence. I'm predicting we will put 20 independents into the House of Representatives and 2 independents into the Senate, maybe more.
It's going to be fascinating that. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. I want to talk about Stephen Paddock. What if we accept that this was a staged event with so many... Can give us an idea. I've got to remind our listeners, you are hearing from a former CIA officer. He isn't anybody, Robert David Steele. He's obviously a bright man, but he's not. Let me just ask you this, Robert. This is really important. How could they, with so many thousands of people watching that, you know, watching that music event, how could they get away with pulling off a hoax with no bodies? How could they do that logistically?
Richie, how did they get away with 9/11?
Well, they did kill a lot of people on 9/11, didn't they?
Well, they killed a lot of people, but they also got away with the fact that there were no planes that flew into the World Trade Center. One of the 3 buildings that came down through controlled demolitions wasn't hit by anything
at
all.
Wasn't hit by anything,
yeah. The Pentagon was hit by a missile, and the official narrative still flies with 80% of the U.S. public. I mean, I'm sorry, but the American people have become stupid.
And you know something? I'm not naive. I'm just trying to be, A, the devil's advocate, and B, you know, a decent journalist
people,
as well, you know what I mean?
People believe what they're told these days. We have managed to, the school system has been designed to eliminate critical thinking. Schools in the United States are nothing more than soft prisons. You're sentenced to an 18-year term in a soft prison where you're required to sit still and raise your hand and not contradict the official narrative.
And regurgitate.
We have eliminated individualism in the United States of America, except for certain areas where we're fighting for it to come back. Now, in this Las Vegas event, there's an awful lot of, there's just, first off, there's a complete lack of evidence as to bodies and blood, okay? I've cleaned up after airplane accidents. And normally when a person is hit with a bullet and they fall inert, there's a big pool of blood that's 1 to 2 feet wide and 1/4 inch deep. And it coagulates, okay? Within a few minutes, it starts to harden and you end up having sticky masses of goo, all right? There's none of that. Now, one guy that I respect enormously tells me that Los Angeles is very, very skilled at cleaning up accidents and murders and so forth, and they scrub the sidewalks and they make all the evidence go away. But when I look at this, what I see is a false flag event with a false narrative, and everybody, including the FBI and local law enforcement and the governor of the state, is complicit. This is, as I have said, at tinyurl.com/Las Vegas false flag. This is a Zionist event, a deep state Zionist event. This is Sheldon Adelson and Michael Chertoff. And we've got lots of good stuff on them having a plan for making a financial killing out of this by basically using it to pour a whole bunch of money into Homeland Security to buy their metal detectors and their gunshot detection towers. And also, Chertoff has the contract for the Super Bowl. And I personally would not attend the Super Bowl because I think if there's any one place where there might be a series of bombs that kill a lot of people, it's going to be the Super Bowl.
And of course, they ultimately get their way. Either way, they get their way, because if we stop going out to enjoy ourselves and watch the bowl game or go to the concert, they get their way because they don't want us congregating anyway.
True, Richie, but yeah. this is about getting the guns.
Yeah.
This is about Barcelona. Of all of the videos that I most recommend at tinyurl.com/Las Vegas false flag, the one I recommend most is the one by Jordan Sather. He's a rising star in the YouTube citizen journalism arena, and he points out a lot of good things, to include the fact that the recent vote and riots and police repression in Spain are the beginning of the end of the nation state as we now know it. I have a post coming out tomorrow that talks about how centralization and rule by secrecy is over. It's simply a matter of time now before we get a crypto trifecta: cryptocurrency or crypto valuation, crypto engagement, and crypto intelligence, that allows citizens to touch all the information without censorship, without manipulation, and allows them to vote at every level from local to global on any threat, any policy, so forth. The world is literally going to change before our eyes in the next 10 years. Las Vegas is the death rattle for Google and Facebook and the Zionists and the neoconservatives.
It
is their death rattle.
Vegas was, I've heard the argument made in the last couple of days that Vegas was chosen for this because in the minds of ordinary Americans, Vegas is a very secure place. So this is kind of like a psyop on people, isn't it? Because if in a very secure place,
well,
one of the most secure places.
Actually, Vegas is not a very secure place.
Well,
but
it doesn't matter if people think it is, right?
When I was doing thinking about terrorists, real terrorism, most terrorist events in the United States are false flag events. They're budget building exercises for the FBI. Colleen Rowley and a deputy director of the FBI in front of Congress have both said that. There's an excellent book called The Terror Factory that shows how the FBI has literally financed and inspired 175 terrorist events across the United States. So please, this is really amazing. I've lost my train of thought, Richard.
No, it's good. No, the point I was making, you made a good point by saying...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Let me come back to you real quick.
Go on.
If anyone wanted to hijack an airplane and run it into a major casino hotel, Las Vegas is the place to do it.
Right, no, I'm not disputing that because you obviously know a lot more than I do about that. And the point I was making is it doesn't matter whether there's any reality to the claim that Vegas is very secure. The fact is most Americans would assume that Vegas is one of the most secure places in the country, right?
Vegas was chosen for two reasons. The first is that Las Vegas is owned by Sheldon Adelson. Anything he wants, he can make happen. Secondly, Las Vegas has a deep, deep buried underground satanic aspect to it. Many of the buildings, and there are a couple of interesting YouTubes coming out now about the pyramid,
yeah.
And the obelisk, so forth. There are many aspects of Las Vegas, like the Bohemian Grove, that have deep, deep satanic occult meaning. And so I think Las Vegas was chosen for a number of different reasons, but the single most principal reason is that Sheldon Adelson, the number one Zionist in the United States of America outside of Chertoff and Chuck Schumer, owns Las Vegas.
And was Stephen Paddock then just any old guy will do, basically? Is that what happened to him? He was lifted out of his life.
It's possible that the guy that was killed is not actually Paddock. There are some reports that it's a different body, the DNA doesn't match, and it's actually a forged, in other words, it's a duplicate Paddock.
So where would he be then, Robert? Where would Paddock be?
What I would tell you, Richie, is there is no way on God's earth, and you know, the people that do this stuff, I think patriotic law enforcement officers are hanging back and letting them make fools of themselves, because they know that we'll see all of this. All of these weapons in Paddock's room, the Antifa literature, this is the kind of stuff that comes out of a fevered 30-year-old on the CIA covert action staff who doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground, okay? The last bin Laden that was killed was a fake bin Laden provided by the Pakistani government as a gift to Leon Panetta and Barack Obama. And we murdered a number of our SEAL operatives, of our special operations people. We murdered them going after fake bin Laden as a political re-election stunt. Richie, you cannot overstate the decrepit lack of integrity at the highest levels of the elite.
No, I've no doubt. Well, I mean, we see it on a day-by-day, on a week-by-week basis with events like this. And regardless of what you or I or anybody else thinks about what happened in the last couple of days, the fact is, I mentioned in the monologue today, incredible statements are made by the Las Vegas PD, the sheriff, and not a single journalist has the decency to say, as we say in the UK, Robert, pull the other one. Pull my other leg, please.
Richie,
you know?
You're absolutely right. And
crazy.
One of the things that truly disgusted me, and John Rappaport has done some excellent stories on this, which are in my Las Vegas false flag tiny URL. When the story starts to fall apart, they bring in the anchors. And the anchors pretend to take these crisis actor clowns seriously. I watched one bit this today in which the anchor is struggling to actually take these fools seriously. There are so many obvious questions that should be asked that they're not being asked. So the mass media is absolutely complicit in what I consider to be a real atrocity.
It's shocking.
Now, I hope,
yeah, it's shocking.
Like Orlando, I hope that there were not a lot of people killed, only the patsy. Generally, in this kind of thing, they just kill the patsy and they fake the rest. But if people were killed, they were killed when they were terrorized. Their adrenalized blood is being harvested by a special so-called blood team. And this is feeding directly into the satanic elite that rules by secrecy in the United States of America.
Let me put a point to you on that. Let me put a quick point to you on that. Because a lot of our listeners like hearing you on this program. That's not in any way to patronize you. They really do. But a lot of our listeners will say, we don't understand Robert here. They have no qualms about killing people. So why would they not kill people? It's easier to kill people.
That's a good question, Richie. And I'm not sure what their calculations are. It could be that their calculations are that they're more likely to get away with a drill in which only one person dies. And if they kill 250 people, if they kill 250 people, then it's like the universal draft. Everybody says, wait a minute, we don't want to go to war. 250 families asking real questions. That's where 9/11 started to fall apart. The families of 9/11 were the first ones to question the government narrative on the day after 9/11.
You see, that is a brilliant answer, Robert. You see, that is a brilliant answer. Now, if I was to ask that question to many of the Muppets in the so-called independent media who say everything is a hoax, they wouldn't have had that answer. That is a brilliant answer. If there are not families around, men and women, some with money, some with maybe political influence, to start asking serious questions about how this happened, obviously that benefits the elites, and that's a good reason not to kill people. And
yes,
I've not heard
is.
That answer given before. That's a bloody good answer. Robert Davis...
Oh, I'm bloody happy you like my bloody good answer.
No, it's a good answer. I have to admit that. You know, I don't know what happened the other day, but that's a very good answer. Robert David Steele is on the line, and it's great to have him back on the programme, tweeting out the links to the links he's given to us already, his articles on this, former CIA officer, of course, as well, and the inspiration for Unrig, which is, I think it's a brilliant grassroots movement. Cynthia McKinney's been involved in it. You know, to try and do something about these people and the media and these politicians. How did it go, Robert? The many events you did with Cynthia, very, very good, I believe. Tell us about it.
Well, the short answer is we've been under deep attack. And I have a federal lawsuit against the people who have been attacking us because they basically attacked our funding sources and they wiped us out. However, some individual donors stepped up. Hashtag Unrig is going to continue. We're taking in 10 volunteers a day. Anyone who wants to volunteer, and it's also international, by the way. So anyone who wants to volunteer to be a hashtag Unrig activist, just send an email to contact@unrig.net. And our intent is to create power cells, this is Cynthia McKinney's term, in each congressional district. 12 people that represent the complete political spectrum, the man, woman, young, old, black, white, Latino, red, yellow. And we want to basically put an executive committee of 12 citizens on top of every member of Congress, like stink on shit. And we want that member of Congress to understand that they do not get to vote the party line the way the two-party tyranny tells them to. They either vote the way their constituents tell them to, or they will be put out of office in November 2018.
And Cynthia McKinney's a remarkable woman to be
involved
in this.
She's the most gracious, elegant woman I've ever met. She is extraordinarily skilled with people, which I'm not. I mean, I can fake it. I was a brilliant case officer. But I'm a crusty old guy, and I don't tolerate fools easily.
A grumpy old man.
But Cynthia has a gift. We call it the thing. She does the thing with people, and it's amazing to watch. I think she could and should be a future president of the United States of America. But she is going to have to learn how to create coalition teams, including the alt-right, which is where I'm from.
She's an amazing woman, yeah. I mean, her own story, the attempts to destroy her by the Zionists
exactly
and the neocons.
Right. They basically came back at us again to discredit me with the Mars sex safe story, which I never said. And so we've suffered some very severe attacks. The good news is I'm honored to be in the top three of the enemies of Zionism in the United States of America. It's very, very important to put America first and to eliminate the Zionist influence on Congress. And let me tell your listeners that I think the Zionists have made two big mistakes in the United States in the last 2 months. Las Vegas is one of them. Sheldon Adelson and Michael Chertoff are now targets. And I mean targets for scrutiny, not targets for violence. I'm a huge truth and reconciliation guy. The second mistake the Zionists have made is to put legislation forward that lists every Zionist first congressman and senator. It's legislation that makes it a felony to be critical of Israel and,
that's right,
and vote for or encourage the boycotting of Israeli products. Every senator and every member of Congress that has co-sponsored this bill to make it a felony to criticize Israel should be run out of office in November 2018.
It's treason.
And by the way,
it's
there's
treason,
a complete
isn't
list
it?
Of them on our website, because I expect them to delete the official list very soon.
Robert, Phil Giraldi was on the program last night. The American conservative fired him from his 15-year
like
gig
him
with him.
I like him a lot.
Really good guy. He was on the program last night. He wrote an article on UNS.com about how Jewish Americans are driving America's foreign wars. Brilliant article. And the last conservative didn't like it. He's was an employee of theirs.
Well,
they fired him.
Phil Giraldi has also said that. But let me make an important point to you
fired
and your listeners,
yeah.
Richie. We only have 9 million Jews in the United States of America. In relation to 150 million voters, that's nothing. The power of Israel in the United States does not come from 9 million Jewish voters who are generally loyal to the Constitution and the Republican. It comes from people like Sheldon Adelson and Michael Chertoff, who will betray anything for Zionism. Okay? People need to understand that we are goyim, we are shiksas. And I'll just end with this little anecdote. I was playing tennis with an Orthodox Jew who was a spectacular tennis player. He was also nailing a different Gentile girl every night. And I asked him, how do you reconcile being an Orthodox Jew with nailing a different Gentile girl every night? He said, shiksas don't count. Well, that explains the USS Liberty. That explains 9/11. That explains Las Vegas. We're all shiksas. We don't count in the eyes of the Zionists. It is time to get the Zionism out of the United States of American Congress.
And here, I mean, they're trying to do something similar here. They're attacking anybody who talks about Jewish power or Zionist power and its influence on UK politics. They're trying to destroy careers here. You know,
they are. They're very successful
and they're doing
at it. And what they also are very successful at is blackmailing people. Here in the United States, Jeffrey Epstein is a fake billionaire. He's a Mossad officer who was given $1 billion to play with. And his role has been to blackmail all politicians, judges, and celebrities, as well as major Wall Street bankers that were not towing the line for the Rothschilds. These people will concoct rape stories to discredit someone who gets in their way.
Epstein is the pedophile. Just remind our listener, Jeffrey Epstein is a convicted pedophile.
Epstein is the guy that runs Lolita Islands and the no-name hotels, one of which may be in Trump Tower, which may explain why Trump is being very quiet. But Jeffrey Epstein is partnered with Ghislaine Maxwell, who is the daughter of Robert Maxwell, who's the most famous Israeli spy in U.S. history. There's an excellent book that I've reviewed, Robert Maxwell, Israeli Super Spy. The Israelis, the Zionists, have compromised all U.S. communications and computing systems, including those of the National Security Agency and the Department of Homeland Defense and most police departments across the United States of America. What's captured by the American system is in Tel Aviv by midnight.
Robert, do us a favor. Is there direct evidence that links Jeffrey Epstein to Mossad? I'll be shot if I don't ask you that. Is there proof of that?
Yeah, just go to my website and just look it up. I forget the two individual pieces that I read, but apart from the fact that Ghislaine Maxwell is almost certainly a Mossad officer, I think Jeffrey Epstein is a Mossad officer as well. I don't think he's an agent. I think he's an officer.
It's a very good.
By the way, let me say, I think that they have both been profiling Chelsea Clinton and Ivanka Trump from birth in order to run a series of honey trap Jew men in front of them both until finally one clicked.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. You know, The Epstein thing and paedophile parties, that I can buy into. The idea that people were being blackmailed by him and through him, I can definitely buy into that. You know, we've seen that so many times over the years. It's staggering, really. And in the absence, of course, of any real reporting, you know, we're dependent on connecting the dots ourselves, using circumstantial evidence sometimes using, you know, hard evidence, but it's just very difficult, isn't it? It's very difficult to pin these people down.
Richie, let me say that I have proposed I mean, out of the four memos that I've written to President Trump, I think he's read at least two of them. But not only have I been proposing the Election Reform Act or the election reform possibilities, because the act has to be written by Congress, but the Election Reform Act would take the money out of politics, would take the Diebold electronic fraud out of politics. It would have paper ballots counted publicly. It would have instant runoff and all these other things. However, the members of Congress are still being blackmailed. And they're not only being blackmailed by the Mossad, they're being blackmailed by the CIA, the FBI, and NSA. COINTELPRO, which Cynthia McKinney has talked about a great deal, was all about blackmailing congressmen to protect budgets and get certain yields. We've also found that the deep state has the Knights of Malta and Freemasons above the 33rd level. And when you're a Freemason at that level, or you're a Knight of Malta, you'll betray your country for the deep state. And so we've had instances where a CIA Knight of Malta and a KGB Soviet Knight of Malta will work together against their respective countries to achieve an objective that is desired by the deep state, which is not at all in the public interest. I salute Peter Dale Scott, who's written the original book on the deep state. But what most people don't realize today is the U.S. government is not actually in charge of the United States of America. The Rothschilds, the Vatican, the City of London, and Wall Street are, and the Federal Reserve. And so we need to learn how to self-govern. We need to break the back of the deep state. And having people wake up to these false flag attacks and understand that they're being played is the beginning of the end of the deep state.
Well, you know, I mean, I consider myself an ordinary guy. I speak to ordinary men and women in my neighborhood, in my community, and I say, look, when you've got a former CIA officer, you know, a decorated man, a man of integrity.
No, it's not for the decorations. Honors. I only got two awards.
Well, it doesn't matter. But you understand the point I'm making. I say to people, pay attention. Guys like that don't talk about false flag events easily, and they don't take any pleasure in doing it. We do, of course, need to educate people as to the fact these things go on.
That's a good observation, Richie. Let me tell you very clearly that I made a decision about 6 months ago that I was willing to give up any possibility of ever having security clearances until such time as I was either president or I was appointed by the president to be director of national intelligence. I would rather tell the truth to the public right now than play the game.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, there are people out there like you, Ray McGovern, Phil Giraldi, yourself, Robert
Steele. My loyalty is to the Constitution of the United States of America.
Robert, thanks for coming back on the program, and good luck, continued success with UnRig, and we will, of course, be dropping in on you from time to time to talk about that. I'll tweet out the links.
That's good, and I am very deliberately making it international now, so we're going to create spreadsheets, and we're going to create UnRig chapters, particularly in the Commonwealth countries. Canada, Australia, Britain, Scotland, and Ireland are of particular interest to me.
Well, continued success with it. You're always welcome on this program to talk about it, Robert. Thanks for your time today. I know you're busy.
Bye-bye, Richie.
Bye for now. Robert David Steele live on the line today from his home, talking about Las Vegas, about UnRig, about what we can do about these situations. I'm not sure. I mean, Robert is very honest in his article, and he was honest today. He doesn't know, but he suspects. I don't. It's not because I'm willfully obtuse. I'm not obtuse. I just think they do kill people. However, I'm open-minded, and his answer, Robert's answer, where he said, well, one of the reasons why they would choose not to kill people is because people want answers. When there are dead bodies, when people die, their families come looking for answers, as we saw with the families of those who died on September the 11th, who in many cases still campaign for and work towards trying to get some answers as to what really happened on September the 11th. And that's a good answer he gave me. You know, why take the risk that, you know, you might have dozens and dozens of people, hundreds of people, clamouring for, demanding answers as to what happened to their loved ones at a concert. So it's a good answer, but I just don't know. You know, they have no qualms about killing people at the same time. But I'm open-minded. One of the reasons I asked Robert to come on was because I saw that he was suggesting that there were no bodies. Because I'm very dogmatic about the Muppets in the so-called alternative media. I am very balanced. You know, I'm a real journalist. I'm a real journalist, the real deal. And I will invite people on the programme who disagree with me, because it's important. But only certain people, people with his credentials, not some of the clowns that, you know, I sometimes mention. I don't do it too often, because they write from afar. They have no credentials. They are money-making, hysterical truthers. Let's call them that, because that's what they call themselves. But I invited Robert on because he has a different take on Vegas than the one that I was kind of forming in my mind, but I can't really form much from Manchester. Anyway, what can I deduce from what we've seen, other than it's a very fishy story? The story about Paddock himself is bizarre, to say the least. Robert David Steele on your Richie Allen Show. Right now, though, very quick break. Back in a minute with more. Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. It's exactly 15 and a half minutes to the top of the hour.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper?
Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise,
yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The creative writing course from Creative Imaginings
may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece
with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and
valuable information to get published.
Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now. Richie Allen.
Richie Allen, welcome back. Charlotte has got a bit of a dilemma. She's on the horns of a dilemma, is Charlotte. She tweets, I'm in that same dilemma now, she tweets. She's speaking to somebody else on Twitter. She says, my husband wants the kids to have the flu vaccination. I say no. He's a pharmacist, says Charlotte. Well, I shouldn't make light of that. I don't know what you do there, Charlotte. If you feel very strongly they shouldn't have them, and you obviously pay attention to independent media sources, obviously it sounds like your husband doesn't, so where do you go from there? I don't know. It's a good one, that. It's everywhere now. I reposted that monologue I did some weeks back, a couple of weeks back, about Kay Burley and the vaccine doctors they had on, because I've seen it a lot today as well. There was a number of advertisements on TV today as I was preparing this programme, advertisements recommending that you hop, skip and jump your way down to your local surgery to get the flu jab, which I won't be having. And I do have asthma, but I manage my asthma very well. I've never smoked in my life. Never will. Never even tried a joint, as I've bored the bejesus out of you by telling you before. So I don't do that. I work out every single day. I run 5 kilometres every morning in about 23 minutes, 30 seconds every single day. That's 7 days a week, no break. I've been doing that now. I recently did my 100th consecutive day of 5K runs. I'm a machine. God damn it. I'm not a machine, really. I'm 42. My knees are gone. I've got a problem with my left ankle. But I manage my asthma. So when they say to me, they've been bugging the bejesus out of me, I've had several text messages. Foolishly gave them my mobile phone number, didn't I? A couple of years ago. So they've sent me a couple of text messages reminding me that I should really come in and have that bloody flu jab. Yeah. What was interesting about that was about 18 months ago, and I did mention on this programme, I was in to have my asthma checkup. Right. Which is just a load of monumental bollocks. Please breathe into this tube as hard as you can. And then you breathe in as hard as you can. And then they say, oh, you've got a fine pair of lungs on you. You're all right. But we think you should still consider the brown steroid inhaler. Fuck off. I told you I don't want it. All right. There was a lovely nurse giving me the asthma review. And she said, do you want the flu jab? And I said, no. And she was young. And she said, quite bizarrely, she said to me at the time, this is a year and a half ago, maybe closer to 2 years. She said, oh, we're meeting our targets anyway. So obviously, the NHS, which is owned by the pharmaceutical industry, it is, it's owned lock stock, right? You might think it isn't, but it is. They have targets. Who gives them the targets? It isn't the health department in London at Westminster. The targets on how many flu vaccines you need to get rid of every year, meaning stick them into people's arms or wherever the hell they stick them. Those targets are determined by the World Health Organization, no doubt about that, and the pharmaceutical industry. She actually said that to me. And I said, listen, I'm a journalist. You shouldn't be saying stuff like that. And she's like, oh, don't quote me. I said, I won't quote you. I don't know your name anyway. But I said, I will be telling that story. Targets. It's a crock, isn't it? It's an absolute crock. Don't have the flu jab. Don't have it. There's no need for it. You're not going to get pneumonia if you get the flu. It's like a 1 in a million chance that's going to happen. So you can say it's not going to happen. Except to the 1 person in a million. Right? God love him or her. But I've had pneumonia myself, by the way. It's horrendous. It is horrendous. Nearly died when I was 15 with pneumonia. And I had it in Spain a few years ago. Nobody can quite believe that one. How do you get it in Spain? But I got it in Spain. It was brutal. And just don't have the flu vaccine. A couple of developing stories. I'm looking at the... you know, I have access to several wires. We still use terms like that, the old school journalists. The Catalan president, Carles Puigdemont, has attacked Spain's King Felipe for deliberately ignoring millions of Catalans. The King of Spain made a televised address yesterday, and he was very forceful in his condemnation of the people in the Catalonian region who voted for independence. And the Catalan president, Carles Puigdemont, has said tonight that the King of Spain is adopting the Spanish government's position. He shouldn't be doing that, he said. And he reiterated that Catalonia could declare independence as early as next week. It's a very interesting story. We've been following that. As you have as well, and the brutality and all of that as well. Charlotte Binns, a different Charlotte, tweets, I used to work at a medical centre where it was a priority for staff to have the flu jab. It hurt, so I didn't bother, she said. Of course it hurts. Sticking anything sharp into your arm hurts, of course. No doubt it does. No doubt it does. Right. Right, we're nearly done for today. There's a couple of irons in the fire for tomorrow, as it were. Not sure what yet, but I'll keep you posted. Want to give a quick plug for Jamie Ike's Friday night. That will recommence next Friday. That's a week on Friday, which as far as I can tell is Friday the 13th. Great night to do it, Jay. Friday the 13th, or is it the 12th? I can't remember. Let's have a look. 13th, yes. Jamie is live a week on Friday, October 13th. Don't miss that. Jamie Ike's Friday night's got another brilliant guest lined up. That'll be terrific. That's a week on Friday. I'll be back with you tomorrow at the usual time of 7 p.m. I will have a couple of very good guests on with me, of course, hopefully as usual. In the meantime, do stay in touch with davidike.com. Pretty much everything we talk about on this programme is covered in depth, and there is great analysis at davidike.com. Listen to the programmes of fabradiointernational.com. Terrific programmes. And do follow me on Twitter, on Facebook, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thank you, Simon Stewart, my friend, my pal, for looking after the YouTube channel and uploading the interviews on that channel on a daily basis. Going to love you and leave you and say look after yourselves and one another. We'll do it all again tomorrow, leaving you with some Bob Dylan. And one of the most brilliant songs ever written, I think, in my opinion anyway. See you tomorrow. Bye now. Thanks for listening.
Once upon a time you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you, people call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall, you thought they were all kidding you. You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. So loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging your next meal. How does it feel? How does it feel to be without? You know you only used to get juiced in it. Nobody's ever taught you how to live out on the street, and now you're gonna have to get used to it. You say you never compromise with the mystery tramp, but now you realize he's not selling. Let us